Shock the Elf, my name's Chase.
My name's David.
And welcome to the RTR Forward podcast, where we talk about everything and anything RTR Forward. That's Pioneer, Standard, Historic, Brawl. And I think that's it. We've got an exciting show for you guys today. First off, I wanted to announce that our podcast is now on Spotify. So if you have Spotify, you can look us up with RTR Forward. And I think we're the only podcast name RTR Forward. So shouldn't be very hard to find. But all of our episodes, including this one, will be up on that platform. So you can start listening there. And yeah, I want to reach out and say thank you to MTG Cast. They're all graciously hosting our podcast and have allowed us to use their services to get our podcast on Spotify free of charge. So they're just a really great service that allows you to listen to a lot of different podcasts of the magic kind. Also, I'd like to make a shout out to our YouTube channel. It's RTR Forward on YouTube. We upload all of our videos. While they aren't actually videos, they're just a nice little background with our voices. If you want to listen on YouTube, throw a subscribe at us. That'd be nice. And then one more, because I'm shelflessly plugging myself, but you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at ParchedMTG. I usually post some pretty interesting things, a lot of Oko hate. But Oko is not that big of a problem, which you'll soon to find out. But yeah, so thanks for listening, everybody, and we're going to jump into the show.
We're going to talk about those Pioneer bands first.
Pioneer bands. So what got banned, David?
Well, so it's two Simic-y cards.
Ooh.
I guess one's not technically Simic, it's just blue. But, you know. So we've got Oko, Thief of Crowns.
Banned in Pioneer?
Banned in Pioneer. So it's banned in Standard? It's banned in Brawl.
And it's banned in Historic. Or
banned in... Well, yeah, it's not banned in Historic.
It's suspended.
Suspended. And it's now banned in Pioneer. So does that mean we don't talk about it ever again?
We don't talk about Oko anymore. No more Oko on the RTR Forward podcast because he has been banned in every format that we cover. So, yeah, Oko is gone. Say good riddance. He finally, it did take him a little bit longer to show his ugly face in Pioneer, but he has finally started to put in the results, being slotted into any deck that runs the blue and green combination. And I think recently, based on some stats that I saw, there was a Magic Fest Oklahoma this last weekend, and he had 16 copies in the top 8, and he actually took first place with a Simic ramp deck. So, yeah, he's everywhere, and he is now gone. Alongside Nexus of Fate, also another card I could say good riddance to.
Yeah, so while Nexus of Fate is not Simic, because there's not green in it, it is often paired with green, maybe something else in addition to green, but Wilderness Reclamation plus Nexus of Fate is it's a pretty big thing.
Yeah, we've had to deal with that combination in Standard for a while. We had to deal with it in, I think it's... Did it get banned in Historic? Did Nexus of Fate get banned in Historic? I don't think it did.
No.
So it's still in Historic, but Pioneer is where it was really starting to shine because we have Dig Through Time, which is a nice little spell that lets you dig 7 deep, get rid of some of that graveyard you don't care about, and find yourself a Nexus of Fate. So just an all-star card in that deck, and they just had so many first spell tools that allowed you to kind of just search through your deck and cycle through it. So very, very good card. I'm glad they banned it now until it started to become a big issue. It hasn't been putting up a ton of like paper tournament results. I know it's been around, but I know, it's had a lot of MTGO 5-0s. So good riddance to that card. I'm glad it's gone.
Plus it's just not a fun card to play against. Watching your opponent play Magic for 10 minutes while they try to win the game is really annoying.
Yeah, I'd rival it up with, Teferi being your only win condition as like, it's just another just terrible way to lose.
Yeah. Teferi, Hero of Dominaria. And that.
Just being your only win condition. Yeah, I'm going to make an emblem, and then every time I draw a card, I'm going to exile one of your permanents, and then eventually you're going to have nothing on your field. I'm going to have everything, but you're going to have to wait for me until I deck you out by using Teferi's other ability to put himself on top of my deck. So
yeah, pretty annoying.
Yeah.
So that leads to the question of what will the new meta look like?
I don't know. It's a good question, David. I know I've been seeing a deck around that I really like. It's a deck that I've been playing for a while now, and that's Bant Spirits. The variant I played in the beginning did not have Oko. I know a few decks adopted Okos for a few 5-0s and MTGO. I almost picked up my Okos. I was a few days close to picking up 3 more Okos. I opened up the first out of a pack, but I'm really glad I didn't pull the trigger because, yeah, he's keeping his price because he's playing Modern and Legacy, but, yeah, he's banned in Pioneer. There's no reason to keep him if you're not playing those older formats.
Yeah. True that. Do you think some old Phoenix will come back?
Possibly.
Yeah. I mean, Dig Through Time's still a thing, so... Or not Dig Through Time, sorry. Treasure Cruise.
Treasure Cruise is still a thing.
That other blue spell. That's still a thing. So, I mean, I feel like at this point that's... I think they're going to wait a while to ban stuff. Like, they already said that they're not going to do another ban announcement until January.
Yep,
right?
So January, I think they said that's when it's going to move in with just this normal ban rotation. So, and alongside that, they also announced that they're getting rid of scheduled bans. So there's no longer going to be, like, if you look in the articles when you look at the ban and restriction announcements, they always say, hey, look out for the next ban on this date. Well, in the most recent ban and restricted announcement, they said that they're no longer going to put a future date. They're going to ban things when necessary. So basically what they said is they're not calling the bans we had the last few months emergency bans. They're just going to become normal random bans.
Yeah, okay.
So January is supposedly when the first like bans are going to kick off, banned list announcement's going to kick off. And then at that point, we're not going to know when the next announcement is unless we're definitely predicting something's going to get banned or if a format's being warped. I like this change. It allows for a little more flexibility. It allows for, you know, cards like Oko to not, you know, rampage Standard for as long. We get other cards like that.
Yeah, with Oko being gone, it will definitely make room for some aggro decks to come about. Maybe control can be more of a thing now.
With Nexus gone, yeah.
With Nexus gone, so hopefully it leads to a much healthier,
more stable meta for sure.
I can tell you what I'm going to be pulling out at some point.
What are you pulling out?
Some Pummeler.
Some red-green Pummeler?
I don't even know if we need red-green. I don't know.
You think you could do mono-red?
I don't know yet. But there's going to be some Pummeler.
Oh, buddy. I love me some Pummeler. Played some Pummeler in Standard.
Yeah. Because you fling it at their face. Ha.
Yeah, you do. But yeah, so hopefully with this, maybe we'll see some more mid-range decks come into play. Like, you know, Sultai mid-range, Abzan mid-range. Stuff like that. Maybe old Siege Rhino will see the light of the day in Pioneer.
Yeah, maybe. See if maybe, I don't know, not Scarab God. The other God. Wow. Major brain fart.
Are you sure it's not the Scarab God?
No, it is Scarab God.
Okay.
Wow. I'll be okay. I said Scarab God, and for some reason I was thinking of Locust God.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, Scarab God. No, that's a card.
Maybe he won't see much play because Pioneer's faster than, like, Standard is, obviously. But I don't feel like Pioneer's too fast.
They've definitely taken it slower, making it a little slower in some regards. I've heard that they're just going to keep banning cards until Siege Rhino is playable.
Maybe.
But yeah, who knows what Pioneer is going to hold as we move into the new year.
And speaking of the new year, let's talk about the old year, meaning this year.
That's right, 2019, baby!
Hey, are we talking about the end of the decade, too?
No.
No. Okay, so just the year. All right. So I think we're going to take this opportunity to talk about Magic in general over the last year. We're probably not going to get through all of 2019 in this episode.
No, not at all. So our plan is, as this is going to be one of the last episodes of the year, is we're going to just kind of walk through 2019. So we're going to hit it month by month. We're going to talk about some banned and restricted announcements, some meta decks at the time, some expansions, some popular cards at the time, Mythic Championships, stuff like that. So we're just going to get started.
So yeah, starting out January of 2019. So Guilds of Ravnica was already out. It came out in 2018. It was the fall set. So in January 2019, Ravnica Allegiance was released, specifically January 25th. And yeah.
It's a good set.
It's a good set.
I enjoyed
more Shocklands.
Hydroid Crisis.
That's an okay card.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, we completed our 10 Shocklands.
Mm-hmm.
The first five, obviously, were in Guilds of Ravnica. Overall, I'd say pretty fun set.
Definitely nothing too oppressive. It definitely gave some good tools to a few decks. I know Esper Control got Absorb, which was a really nice 3-mana counterspell that gains you 3 life. They got Kaya's Wrath, the first 4-mana board wipe we've seen since original Return to Ravnica, back, you know, at the beginning of Pioneer. But just another 4-mana Wrath that has a little upside of if you kill your own creatures, you gain life. And then we saw, you know, Mortify come back, just an all-around great tool. Destroys a creature, destroys an enchantment. There are some pretty problematic enchantments kind of rolling around at this time. You know, like Wilderness Reclamation. What's that card, David?
Yeah, that is a 4-mana, 3 generic, 1 green. It's an enchantment, and it untaps all your lands at the beginning of your end step.
Yes, it does. That card itself propelled quite a few strategies for later in the year, Simic Nexus being one.
Yeah, just, ooh, man.
Team of Reclamation?
Team of Reclamation.
Yeah, Expansion Explosion.
That's a fun card to kill somebody with.
That is a fun card. I have seen that card's kind of been resurfacing recently with the more recent standard bans.
And let me tell you, as a bad Magic player, I definitely killed myself with that card because I'm dumb. Yeah, I domed my opponent for 30, but I made myself draw 30 and deck myself at the same time. So, rip.
Sounds like a draw to me.
Yep.
But yeah, alongside that, Mono Red got a nice little tool in Light Up the Stage, allowing, you know, Mono Red decks to have, you know, pseudo card draw.
Yeah.
Just a really, really neat all-around card. It really propelled Mono Red into kind of just a really strong deck for the rest of, you know, the rest of that standard season. What else came out?
What else came out? Card-wise? Hero Precinct 1.
Heck yeah, it did. That was another card that has continued to bring in some different strategies.
It's definitely an interesting card.
I think it's really fun.
That it's just a good Magic card. It's not busted in any way, shape, or form. It's just a good card.
Just a good card. Synergizes really well with your multicolored stuff, and what better set for it to come out in than in the middle of a Ravnica block. So yeah. Pteramander, another card that came out at the time. Neat little evolve ability if you got instants and sorceries in your graveyard. Become a 5/5 flyer for 1 mana. Oh, 2 mana if you evolve it, but yeah. Slotted itself into a lot of different strategies at the time as well. Just some good all-around cards from the set. We saw a few Planeswalkers. Not any noteworthy. While 2 of them were 3 mana, they weren't broken, so they were just good. They were okay. They were what we should expect. The 3-mana standard at the time.
They were all right.
They were all right. One interesting fact that I learned at this time was that collector's boosters were actually available for Ravnica Allegiance, but only sold in Japan. So that means you could have bought a collector's booster of Japanese Ravnica Allegiance and gotten 10 uncommons, 3 rares or mythic rares, and 2 foil of any rarity. So it sounds like they were testing it out. Looks like, and this was back when they had MSRP as well, so it was about $13.
Yeah, that's a lot cheaper than the Throne of Eldraine ones.
Yeah, but if you kind of look at, you know, what is included here, it's basically the price of 3 packs, because you're getting, on average, you know, 3 rares or 3 mythics. Or
yeah.
3 rares / mythics.
For sure.
So you could definitely, as we're going to continue into this year in review, you'll kind of see like how this is like a little precursor to what's to come in the future.
Also in January, we had a BNR announcement. I'm gonna let you talk about this one because I have no clue what that card does.
Okay, it's a Kark Clan Ironworks. I believe it's a 2-mana artifact, something like that. I don't have a reference in front of me. I wasn't expecting you to throw me into the modern pit here. We're RTR4. We don't cover modern. But all from what I know is it orchestrated a really cool combo deck that was really consistent and just involved a few artifacts both on the field and in the graveyard, and you could use the Kark Clan Ironworks to sack artifacts to gain 2 mana. And so they were able to do some infinite loops of, you know, generating infinite mana and using a few additional artifact spells that when sending to the graveyard or when being sacrificed could either deal damage or draw cards, allowing them to draw their decks and finish off their opponents. So it was a really prevalent deck at the time, showing a lot of results in a lot of different modern tournaments. And I think it deserved to be banned at the time. Like I said, my opinion doesn't really matter as much. I don't play a lot of modern, but from what I read, is it just was a really powerful card, and it enabled a really, you know, powerful deck. But yeah, that got banned.
Yeah. And going into, let's just talk about Ravnica Allegiance as a whole and its standard. So the Ravnica Allegiance metagame.
So this was taken in February. So this is, I kind of just pulled a snapshot of the meta from February at the time. So it allowed a few weeks. I know Ravnica Allegiance came out, I believe, on the 25th. It allowed a few weeks for, you know, standard to settle, decks, the metagame to build based on the new cards. So we got a few different decks that were played at this time and some of their highlight cards. So what's the first deck, David?
We got that Sultai Midrange.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, we got some Hydroid Crassus, which... Yeah, it's an okay magic
it's
card.
It's just an okay magic card that's been seen play in every blue and green deck since.
Not every blue green deck.
Most blue green
decks. They got some Simic Flash without it at some point. Not right now.
At some point, yeah.
At some point we did. It's in there now, but yeah, use the Explore package from Ixalan and Rivals of Ixalan, which included Jade Light Ranger, Merfolk Branchwalker, and Wildgrowth Walker.
Which just allowed you to clear lands off the top of your deck, gain a bunch of life by triggering Wildgrowth Walker to gain you 3 life per explore. Just really, really synergistic package and kind of just slid into any green deck.
Yeah, it was a good mechanic. We had Hostage Taker, which was definitely an interesting card. Saw a decent amount of play.
Yeah. Really strong when it first came out, and then it kind of plateaued off. But as some of the blue-black decks kind of came back into the front, you started to see quite a bit more play. It's just a really nice creature removal spell.
Yep, led to some awkward draws if you have 3 of them on the board at the same time. And, of course, our friend, Llanowar Elves.
God rest his soul. Poor guy.
Currently in Standard, whereas in Pioneer we've got 2 copies of it. One may be called Elvish Mystic.
You're right.
Anyway, so yeah, Sultai Midrange was good. It used Hydroid Crassus to refill its hand later in the game.
Hydroid Crassus, it had that that modal spell, the Golgari one, Find Finality.
Yeah.
Had that in there to, let's say Crassus dies, okay, I'll just return it back to my hand and cast it again.
Also a decent board wipe.
Yep, very good board wipe on the other side. Just all around, just had a lot of just really good, just good stuff cards in that deck that could really just out-advantage some other decks.
Yeah, and that's one thing to talk about in this standard was how good the mana base was at this point.
The mana base was extremely good. Having all 10 Shocklands and all 10 Checklands that synergize so well with the Shocklands, you could play any assortment of colors.
Yeah.
And not be punished.
It made some interesting deck constructions because you could just do whatever you wanted color wise.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you know, leading into the opposite realm of that, Mono Blue Tempo was another popular deck at the time. Just all around, just really annoying deck to play against.
I mean, it's very similar to the current Simic, or Simic Flash deck.
Yeah, so the Simic Flash kind of borrows some elements that Mono Blue Tempo had at the time. I think Mono Blue Tempo definitely did it a little better, having cards, you know, like Siren Storm Tamer that, you know, allowed you to counter spells that were hitting you or a creature you controlled, and it was just a creature that sat on the field, and it could be a beater. Tempest Djinn, which, you know, got bigger. It was a 0/4 flyer, but it got bigger power as the amount of islands you controlled. So, just another nice finisher. They had all kinds of counter spells like Wizard's Retorts, which cost 1 less because half of their creatures were wizards. So, it's basically a counter spell, 2 blue mana. And then Spell Pierce, which is just another really good gotcha spell. 1 mana, counter any non-creature spell unless they pay 2. Just an all-around really good card. Just kind of combining those all together. Cherry on top, though, Curious Obsession. That is what fueled the deck.
That $5 uncommon.
That was an uncommon from, what was it, Rivals of Ixalan.
Yeah, it might have been Ixalan, I don't know. It was definitely from that block.
It had a pirate wheel and its icon. That's all I remember. But just a really a solid card, allowed mono blue to just keep with the advantage train, drawing cards every turn, refilling their hand, you know, because playing a draw go counterspell slash tempo deck, you're gonna run out of stuff eventually. But Curious Accession allowed you to kind of build that hand back up.
Yeah, for sure. Great card. It was a fun deck to pilot and even honestly play against, because there was a lot of thought about.
There was a lot of thought. Still not my favorite deck to play against, but I also played, you know, like Esper Control and Sultai Midrange, which they don't like being tempoed.
What decks do you like to play against?
Aggro. At least they're pretty straightforward.
Okay. Moving into the next deck, we've got Azorius Aggro. This one was interesting. So it was basically mono white with a splash of blue for
a few counterspells on the board.
Like, was it counterspells?
Yeah, it was like negates and...
I thought it was deputy detention mostly.
I think that was eventually.
Okay.
I think in the initial starts of it, it was for negates and the one that counters something four or greater. Can't think of... Disdainful Stroke. Stuff like that. Because at the same time, we had a deck like Esper Control running around with the four mana board wipe. And being able to just Disdainful Stroke that with a board full of creatures just knocks Esper Control off its feet. Really, really secures just a strong advantage in the game. But yeah, with Esper Control also running around, also being a very strong deck at the time, ran cards, like I said, like Absorb, Kaya's Wrath, Mortify, Cry of the Carnarium was another new pickup for them, which was just a 3-mana pseudo board wipe. Gave everything -2/-2 and exiled. Which was really good against mono white, because mono white ran Odonto Vanguard, which just a really good white weenie card.
Oh yeah, I'm an aggro deck. I don't mind losing 4 life to keep my dude.
Yeah, 4 life to make it indestructible. Gain +2 attack when it attacks. Just a solid card. And so Cry of the Carnarium was really good against that card, because whether you can make it indestructible or not, it can't stop it from dying with 0 toughness.
Right.
And Esper Control also had cards like Thought Erasure, which was just another really good pickup.
Let's talk about the fact that that's in Standard right now, not seeing a lot of play, and I'm fine with it.
I mean, I'll bring it back.
You can bring it back, okay.
I've been eyeballing some Grixis Fires of Invention decks. Yeah, Thought Erasure.
Yeah. Okay, I see you.
I see you. But yeah, Esper Control, all around pretty solid at the time. It was pretty high up there for a while.
Yep. So the snapshot you took has Izzet Drakes, which I think is interesting. Because I feel like this may have been just before Izzet Phoenix was a thing. Cause...
I think it was. I think this was right in that sweet spot, right before everybody realized that Phoenix was busted.
Well, the interesting thing about Izzet Phoenix was it didn't run any Ravnica Allegiance cards. That was the weird thing about it.
That is super weird.
Like, at that, I don't know if it... I think it was... Yeah, it was Mythic Championship 1, which we'll talk about here in a second. But LSV literally brought a list with 0 Ravnica Allegiance cards in it. It was all...
Well, I mean, is it was in Guilds of Ravnica, so you got everything you need from that set, right?
Right, but it's just interesting that it literally had 0 cards from the most recent set.
That's hilarious. I did not know that.
And then, so Izzet Drakes at that time,
yeah. Which morphed so this I believe this metagame snapshot was taken before the Mythic Championship 1, which was later that month.
It used, well, it still used a lot of the guilds.
Yeah.
But some Terramander, some Crackling Drake. Crackling Drake, my boy.
He's still around. You can still play him.
You act like I don't. Niv-Mizzet, also still around. Enigma Drake is gone from the Standard.
It is gone.
But, basically that was make some flyers that got bigger as you cast your tempo-ish spells.
Mm-hmm. Cards like, Lightning Strike, Chart of Course, Opt, Shock, stuff like that. Just fill in your graveyard real fast, making both your Cracklin Drake and Enigma Drake huge.
Yeah.
It's just a solid game plan, for sure.
And then last but not least on this list is the early brewings of some Simic Nexus.
Oh, buddy.
We got that Wilderness Reclamation Nexus of Fate combo in there. And, of course, cards like Growth Spiral, which is a good magic card.
That's a solid card.
Root Snare. So we've got some Thogs.
Mm-hmm.
Chemistry Insights. So, you know, refill that hand.
Typical
draw spell.
Refill. No, it's better than the typical draw spell. You refill that hand, then you refill that hand again.
That's true.
Get rid of that land in your hand. It's just, that's a solid, and it definitely hasn't been seeing as much play as it used to. I still think it's just a solid 4-mana draw spell. And with Simic Nexus, you know, poking its little ugly head around that time period, we also saw a banned and restricted announcement in February. This was actually on Valentine's Day. They brought our lives with love by getting rid of Nexus of Fate in Best of 3 on MTG Arena.
I think that's a typo. Wasn't it just Best of 1 that it got banned in?
Oh, it was Best of 1.
Yeah.
Whoopsies! It was Best of 1. You're right. Because at the time, you know, the fact that most decks weren't running any, you know, counter magic / disruption spells game 1, you know, Nexus of Fate could just run free and just combo off so easily without any disruption. So yeah, it did get banned in Best of 1 Arena. That was actually our first, like, arena ban of this new standard.
Well, I think it's been the only, like, this is just banned in Arena.
So it was the first ban in standard, in this standard of Arena, but also it was the first, like, banned in one game mode.
Yeah.
It was really interesting.
Very interesting.
I'm pretty sure Wizards just didn't want to ban that card because they knew that it was a buy a box promo, so they'd just sell more boxes.
Yeah.
So I think that was part of the reason, because what you'll see as we move on through the year is more and more you see people complaining about Nexus of Fate. You see Nexus of Fate doing better and better as time goes on and as War of the Spark comes out. And you also see a banned and restricted announcement with no changes, but a whole article underneath it talking about Nexus of Fate and that they're keeping an eye on it and just all this stuff. And they never actually pulled the trigger on it, and it eventually rotated out. No one really knows. Was it a good idea to keep it in that long? I don't know. I think it probably should have just been banned in general, because it did kind of warp the metagame a little bit around it to a degree, just because no one wants to sit there and watch you play Magic. It was the most solitaire deck you could play at the time, and just was just all around just promoted some bad gameplay on coverage, too. It just wasn't fun to watch.
Well, there was a specific card that came out at some point that might have made it a little less viable, but we'll talk about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second, but at the time, Simic Nexus was doing really good, so it did get banned in Best of 1. And then around that time, we also had a Mythic Championship. This was our first Mythic Championship won. Who won that, David?
Autumn Burchett with some Mono Blue Tempo.
Yeah. Good deck. Real good
Very
deck.
Very good deck.
Say it again. Reiterate it. It's a good deck.
Good deck. I think I remember watching this one specifically, and I mean, LSV, like I said, was playing.
Is it Phoenix?
Phoenix, which, I mean, that's my type of deck right there. And so I was watching him, and he lost in the semis to the control deck that ended up losing to Autumn in the finals, which was unfortunate because I think he could have taken on the Mono Blue Tempo matchup pretty well. But yeah, this one was in paper.
We had an argument last podcast deciding, you know, what Mythic Championships were in paper and what were in MTG Arena. So as we step through the year, we're gonna call them out here. So one for David. This one's paper.
Yep.
So I do remember watching this one, and it was just it was a good all around tournament. A lot of really interesting decks. I think Simic Nexus also poked its head in the top 8 at the time too, but it didn't end up, you know, faring very well against Mono Blue Tempo.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then right at the end of the month, we got a little special little announcement for those Modern players out there. It was Modern Horizons got announced on February 28th, basically saying that R&D and Wizards is creating a set that's going straight into Modern. So typically when sets go to Modern, they have to go through Standard first. But for this one, they changed it up, and it actually went straight to Modern, which allowed them to kind of crank up the power level on it too, because you don't want to release a stupidly busted set and let it wreck standard and then go straight into modern. So, yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit when we jump to the month of June, which is when it was actually released.
Yeah. And in the month of March, we saw the release of the Challenger decks, which was the second year that the Wizards has done this. And honestly, I think is one of their better paper products, where it's, I think it's around $30 is what most places sell it for. And it's a, they call it a Challenger deck, but it's pretty much like a, here's the start of a meta standard deck.
Mm-hmm.
And you can build off of it. And they have great value. So the four for 2019 were called United Assault, which was mono white. Lightning Aggro, which was mono red. Deadly Discovery, which was black green explore. And Arcane Tempo, which was Is It Drake's? And some of the highlights in these, Arcane Tempo had Arclight Phoenix. A copy of Arclight Phoenix, and I believe the blue-red Checkland, I think
it had. I think that was in there.
Yeah, I think it had.
Niv-Mizzet was also in there, too.
Yeah, Niv-Mizzet was also in there. I mean, at the time, I think Arclight Phoenix was close to $30.
Yeah, it was definitely pushing $25, $30, so you could just buy that deck and just immediately have the value of that deck in one card.
Yep. United Assault was, I mean, I don't remember if it had a copy of Legion's Landing, but so it had two History of Benalias.
Mm-hmm. So it had two History of Benalias, two Legion's Landings, four Banalish Marshals, and a very similar White Weenies package to the one that was being played in the metagame, but not exactly.
Right.
But, you know, having two History of Benalias and two Legion's Landings, which at the time were pretty expensive.
Yeah.
Which was another just home run hit.
Yep.
In the value train.
The Lightning Aggro, which was mono red, had Chain Whirlers and
the Steamkin.
Steamkin.
Yep. Steamkin. I think it had two. It might have had a Experimental Frenzy. I think it had one or two copies of that in there as well. Honestly, out of all the decks, that was the one was the most easiest to pull out and just play at FNM and do well with it. It needed maybe just a few minor upgrades, maybe take out a few of the meh cards from it and throw in a few more Experimental Frenzies, but altogether it was already just a really solid deck.
And then Black Green Explore, which was probably the weakest out of the box. I don't remember how, I think, did it have one copy of Assassin's Trophy? It might have.
I know for sure that it had one Shockland in it. It had the Golgari Shockland in it. But I think for the most part, I think it had like one Jadelight Ranger. And at the time was pretty expensive too.
Yeah.
But other than that, it wasn't a very playable deck. And I think at the time, I know these Challenger decks are kind of made a little bit in advance. For the most part, I assume R&D or play design is, you know, kind of theorizing, you know, what the meta will look like, maybe altering it as it gets closer to the product releasing. But with products like these, I mean, they've got to be submitted and finished, you know, a month or two ahead of time, so that they can get off to the printers and make sure that they're distributed on time and everything like that. So a lot of these decks were more so predictions, you know, maybe based on decks that were played, you know, right around, you know, Ravnica Allegiance coming out late January, early February. And obviously they have some limits on how much value they can put in the deck. They're not going to give you a fully playable standard tier one deck for $30, but they definitely, I think they're definitely very generous in these products for sure. Giving us a lot of really cool reprints. A lot of expensive ones too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think all around it's just a solid product. And I know they recently, I think this week, announced that we're getting another set of them next year. So the 2020 Challenger decks will be released in April. They'll consist of the current standard cards as well as cards from Theros Beyond Death. So I guess right now they're predicting, you know, what's going to be good in the meta. And I think that's, you know, the whole part of what play design does in general is they're playing, they're trying to predict what the meta is going to look like, making adjustments based on that, stuff like that. But we all know they're not incredibly good at it sometimes with, you know, this last standard that we've had to go through. But altogether, I think they definitely made some good strides. But yeah, I'm excited for the Challenger decks. I'm excited to see what value they have in them and what reprints they've got for players.
Yeah, they're, like I said, they're very good value and they're great for newer players, which honestly, that's how you get a bigger player base, is getting new people into it. So, following the Challenger decks, we also had a B&R announcement on March 11th. And this is what you were talking about, where they were watching Nexus.
Yep, I've got it. It says no bans, but watching Nexus. Yeah, they just basically said, yeah, there's not going to be any bans in any formats, but hey, I know Nexus of Fate is a hot topic at the time. Here is everything we're talking about in R&D about it. And whether they never actually alluded to whether they were going to make a decision or not, but they definitely said that they're definitely watching it. It is proving to be maybe a problem, but I think at the time their consensus was, let's wait for the next set to come out and see what happens and stuff like that. And around that time as well, we got our first little announcement. I think at the time, we weren't told what the set was called. I know they held the name of the set for a while.
It was kind of like a, here's a sneak peek of things.
Yeah, so they gave us a little sneak peek trailer. I know sometime in February, but in March, they gave us a little article where, I know in the trailer you saw like this tower with all these stained glass windows of all these planeswalker arts. People were trying to like zoom in, enhance, find the planeswalkers. Where are they? What's the art from? Stuff like that. And eventually they released an article showing all 36. Yes, they announced at that time that there were going to be 36 planeswalkers in one set, which at the time was mind-blowing. I know I was really excited. I was like, how are they going to do this? Are there going to be rare planeswalkers again? Are there going to be uncommon and common planeswalkers? I don't know. It was really just a hype time. At the time, we through the stained glass arts, we were able to see some new planeswalkers that we had never seen before. We were able to see some returning ones as well that we hadn't seen in a while. So altogether, just a really cool announcement.
Yeah, and along with that announcement, they announced their War of the Spark book, which was going to be available at the end of April. Did they call it War of the Spark book at the time?
No, I think it was just called like Magic War of the Spark novel. It was just called War of the Spark. But I begrudgingly picked up a copy of that.
Rip you.
At the time, I was pretty hyped for it. Like, this is before any reviews came out about it. At the time, they were getting this cool new author, Greg Weisman, who had written for the Gargoyles television show. Like, pretty well-known guy. And then I picked up the book and I read it in like a day or two. At the time I was like, oh, this is cool, like it's a book about magic characters. And I did realize though that the pacing felt very off. He definitely was trying to juggle too many characters, so the pacing was definitely kind of weird. I think a lot of big like story moments were kind of sped through. It definitely was an okay read. I've definitely read better when it comes to magic lore, but we won't even talk about, you know, the sequel. The sequel was an absolute garbage fire. I didn't even read it, but I didn't have to. But yeah, so alongside that, we got a Invitational. Don't really know the difference.
Well, let me tell you the difference here, boy. Mythic Invitational, they just invited random people.
Oh, okay.
It was a lot of streamers.
Yeah.
It was some pros. And yeah, it was random. Yeah.
And so it was...
The prize pool, was it $250,000 to first place, I think?
It was a big number.
Yeah. And it was basically, I think, Wizards trying to go, hey, world, gaming world, this is our new product that has been out of beta for 4 months at this point.
4 or 5 months, yeah.
Yeah, we want it to be a
esports tycoon.
Esports, yeah. We want it to compete with Hearthstone and
other.
So we're gonna make a format that's similar to Hearthstone and not like Magic at all. So what this format was Duo Standard, which if you haven't heard of that, I don't blame you because I don't think it was played outside of this Invitational. And it was basically you came with 260 card standard decks, so there was no sideboarding. I think you could have a sideboard because there's probably always cards that are wish cards or something. But and basically you would play best of one, but you played a 3-game match where once you won with one deck you had to switch to the other deck. And I think it was random which deck you got.
The first round.
Just weird.
Very strange. We were seeing deck combos like a player running Esper Control and then running Mono White Aggro on the other side. So we had many matchups where Esper Control was walking into a Mono White Aggro and they weren't necessarily prepared for it.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So there was a lot of coin flip wins for sure.
Yep.
But it was an interesting watch, but I'm glad they haven't done duo standard since, because it just wasn't a good format for competitive play for sure. But someone did win, and that was Andrea Mengucci.
Yep.
With Esper Control and White Weenie, which was a combo that you see a lot in the tournament for sure.
And he was one of those. I don't think he was a Magic Pro ahead of that. He's now in the MPL, so
yeah.
I think he played Magic before that, but I don't think he was at like pro tours and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know.
I could be wrong on that, so feel free to correct me.
But yeah, so alongside that, the Invitational was the last weekend of March, and at the end of the Invitational on Sunday, they announced the new set. So War of the Spark was announced. It was a Planeswalker War on Ravnica, Nicol Bolas invading, crazy stuff. The undead Lazurtep soldiers, maybe the god the gods from Amonkhet coming back eternalized, stuff like that. And alongside that, they released a brand new trailer, which was unlike anything we'd seen before when it came to Magic the Gathering set trailers. In the past, we had trailers, you know, that were more so just moving art, which was neat at the time. It definitely showed off a lot of different artists and stuff like that. But this new style of doing it with, you know, fully rendered, beautiful 3D animation was definitely blew me away. I watched that trailer so many times because it was just awesome. Just all together, just gave me chills.
Yeah, I will say it was cool. I mean, I only watched it once. But it was cool. I mean, it makes you hopeful that somewhere down the line, because I think they're working on like a Netflix series or something for Magic, maybe they cannot screw it up like they screw up half the stuff that they do, trying to go away from the card games.
Yeah, I think around this time also they did, that was when they announced that Magic the Gathering is going to have its own Netflix show directed by the Russo brothers, who also directed, you know, other Marvel movies like Endgame and I think Infinity War and stuff like that.
Wait, you're just going to throw those out there like they're not that big of a deal?
It's a big deal. and some other really, really good writers for the show, but we haven't heard any details since. It's December now. I think it was announced back in March, April. We're not going to hear anything about it. I think it's appeared on Netflix now for 2021. It has a date.
Turns out shows and produced stuff take a long time to make.
Yep. So we'll find out. We'll probably get more news about it next year. So that'll be interesting. But yeah, really awesome trailer. Definitely set the tone of the set. That is just a crazy all-out war, and that people and planeswalkers were going to die. And we did see some deaths of planeswalkers with the War of the Spark claim 2.
Yep.
One of them was Domri. Rest in peace, Domri.
Yeah.
If you
have no strong feelings against the guy.
If you read any of his lore, he's a little jerk. He's a little entitled jerk.
Who else died? There was like two more people.
No, one other person died. It was...
There was two other people. There's an obvious one. Chad.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Sorry. Poor Chad.
Yeah.
Mr.
For those outside of the loop, Chad is Gideon.
Beefy McBeefcakes. Yes. Gideon sacrificed himself to save Liliana's life at the end of the War of the Spark after Liliana defied Bolas's orders to attack with the Dreadhorde. He holds her contract, and the contract says if voided, she bursts into flames and dies. So Gideon gave her his immunity. So Gideon's invulnerable, but he gave his aura of invulnerability to Liliana. And Liliana did not die, but Gideon received her curse and died for her. So we lost Gideon, our mono white beefcake. We also lost, which is the other one I was trying to think of, the greatest thief in the multiverse. I cannot think of his name.
I wish I could help you out here, bud, but I don't remember either.
Okay. We also lost the greatest thief in the multiverse, Dak Faden.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Was he even a planeswalker in the set?
He wasn't in the set. No, we only saw him in a fraction of the book and in the trailer where he dies.
That makes more sense why I didn't remember that he died.
What we learned from that is that the story and the cards all happen at different times, as in they're designed at different times. So by the time that the story was finished, the cards had already been designed. and already been, their set had already been structured, so they weren't able to fit Dak Faden into the set, because when they were designing and building the set, they did not know Dak Faden was going to die. They were just making the cards. So yes, Dak Faden perished without seeing any light in that set. But he was originally printed in the conspiracy sets. He has one planeswalker, and he sees a lot of play. He's just a 3-mana planeswalker that loots and steals artifacts and stuff. Sees play in Legacy and Vintage. That's the only formats he's legal in besides Commander. But yeah, never saw the standard light of day, but he also perished.
So moving through March and into April, not a lot happened in May and April, but we did have another Mythic Championship that was paper.
It was paper. You're right.
This happened to be Modern, so I don't know if that's actually a win for me or not, because Modern's, I guess they could have played it on Magic Online, but
I don't think anyone wants to see Magic Online.
So, but yes, and the champion was Eli Loveman. He was playing humans. Was it 4-color, 5-color? Does it really matter?
I think it's 4-color humans. Okay. I know it's more than 3 colors.
It's Modern. We don't really care. So.
It's a really good deck.
But we just had to point it out because I was right and it was in paper.
You're right.
So going into May was the official release of War of the Spark, which, like we said before, had 36 planeswalkers, and a lot of them were pretty good. How many of them were good, Chase? Okay, maybe not how many, but let's name some good ones.
At least 7 of them were good, I think. So we had Teferi, Time Raveler, just all-around busted card. Just makes it to where your opponent plays Hearthstone, and you can do whatever you want. You can cast instants on your opponent, or sorceries on your opponent's turn. You can cast instants on your opponent's turn. It don't matter, but all that matters is that your opponent can't play anything.
Yeah, great tempo card. Bounce your one thing that you played on turn 2, draw a card.
And stay alive for 3 mana.
Yeah.
Single-handedly, I think, helped put Nexus in its place.
Which was a good thing.
It was a good thing. And I think Teferi's kind of the reason why Nexus Fate never really got banned, because they had that safety net. Just all around, just a really good card. And it's impacted every format it's been a part of. Alongside that, Narset, Parter of Veils, just an uncommon walker, but the fact that she can stop your opponents from drawing more than one card each turn is really good. And she also has another ability that lets her, you know, basically do the Search for Azkanta effect, where you can look at the top 4, grab a non-creature spell, and put it in your hand, stuff like that. Just all around, just a really good card. The fact that it just stops extra draws is what makes it so busted in the older formats, for sure. It sees a lot of play in Legacy and Vintage because of that. Nissu, Who Shakes the World, just another all-star. We've seen her constantly all year. Didn't see as much play initially when she came out, but has seen a lot of play now in all of the green decks. We got David's favorite card.
I wouldn't say favorite, but he's an all-star. Arboreal Grazer. The bestest of boys. He's literally, we can argue about this, but he is literally one of the reasons why Field of the Dead and Nexus of Fate were better than what they should have been.
I can agree with Field of the Dead. I don't necessarily agree with Nexus of Fate.
He ramps and he's a blocker. He's great.
Okay, you sold me. I definitely see, like, he definitely is an all-star in the ramp decks for sure. You just keep a hand with a bunch of lands, and then you throw down a Grazer, and then you're on 3 mana turn 2, and they're not elves. They can't get shocked at your lands.
Yeah.
Just solid. And he had reach.
Yes, and he has reach. Let's throw that up there, too.
0/3 with reach. Just all-around good card.
Going back to the Planeswalkers, we had Tamio, Collector of Tales, which she also helped enable Nexus and, I don't know, Teemer reclamation type decks. She goes, she searches. It's not search, but you look at the top 4. Is it 4 or 5?
You name a card, then you look at the top 4. 4. Reveal the top 4. And then...
Yeah. The card that you named is any of those top 4 cards, you put it in your hand. So there could be 2 copies of the card.
Yeah, and then the rest goes in the graveyard.
Yep, and her minus was get something from the graveyard and put it into your hand. Also pretty good. Its static ability, which has probably blown people out more than once, was you don't discard Or sacrifice?
Yep, don't discard or sacrifice. So, thought of race train, got nothing on her.
Yeah, there was a lot of, hell, there was a lot of times I had Tamio on the field and somebody played Thought Erasure against me on MTG Arena, and I'm like, damn, that sucks. And then nothing happened, and I was like, oh yeah, cool.
Yeah, I'm playing MTG Arena, I don't have to remember my passive effects and my Planeswalkers.
Yeah, bad players get to play Arena better. Anyway, keeping with Planeswalkers, we got to talk about Karn. While Karn, the great creator, was... He hasn't seen a lot of standard play.
He saw a fair amount when he first came out in the mono green Tron deck, which is, I mean, it wasn't Tron, but it's mono green, and you played a bunch of ramp spells, ran the Explore package, and then you just had a sideboard full of artifacts that Karn could just wish right out of your sideboard. A lot of essential tools that you could just pull in at any point. You had cards like Ugin, the Ineffable, who allowed your artifacts to cost two less.
Colorless spells in general,
but there aren't really any colorless spells, but artifacts and standard.
True.
But I think we won't even see Ugin and Zendikar back together. When we go back to Zendikar, Ugin won't be in standard. Interesting. Not like we'll see any Eldrazi and Zendikar, right? They're all dead, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
But anyways, Karn the Great Creator seeing a lot of play in other formats like Modern. A nice little combo with him and Mycosynth Lattice.
Yeah, nice is not the word I use for nice, that combo.
Nice as in your opponents can't tap mana or do anything because all of their lands are artifacts, and Karn makes it to where artifacts can't be activated. It doesn't matter if they have a mana ability or not. Karn doesn't care about that. You can't use it. So just an all-around solid card. Really good in older formats. And then Dovin's Veto.
Yeah, Dovin's Veto's I don't know. I don't feel like it's broken by any means. It's a good counterspell. If it were just a straight-up counterspell, it would be worse, but since it's closer to like a negate counterspell that just can't be countered, I think it's fair.
Fair. I think it's just a good card in general. Saw a lot of play, and it still does. Sideboard material for a lot of decks that run blue and white.
Yep. We had Command the Dreadhorde as well, which originally wasn't. I don't think anybody looked at that card and goes, that card's nuts. But it got paired pretty quickly with the Explore package.
Oh, yeah.
Some interesting things happened with that one. We'll talk about that in our meta here.
But yeah, no, Command the Dreadhorde, fantastic card. Definitely takes advantage of what we said earlier in Standard having really good mana bases. It was four color. So the blue, white, green, black. Running Teferi, Time Raveler, stuff like that. The 6-4 package to gain all the life back that Command the Dreadhorde makes you lose. So just all around, just a solid card. Really fun. I enjoyed playing it while it was popular.
Yeah, and the last card on our short list here, obviously we're not talking about every card, but Feather the Redeemed, which basically made a deck in and of itself work.
Yeah, Boros Aggro.
Yeah. That deck doesn't work. I'm not going to say it doesn't work at all, but it doesn't work near as well without Feather the Redeemed in the list.
Yep, just a solid card, really good card in Commander too. The fact that you can just get anything that you target her with back.
Yeah.
Just good card.
So the interesting thing about War of the Spark was the Japanese packs
had anime Planeswalkers.
Yeah, they just look cool.
I mean, I think they're really cool. I took my chance, and I know our local gaming store brought in a few boxes and sold, you know, quite a bit of Japanese packs. They were marked up a little bit because the Japanese packs are a little more sought after because they have some really, really sought after alternate arts, the anime arts. I know one of them, the Liliana, was drawn by someone who drew some Final Fantasy characters at the time, like a really an older artist who's really well known. David is signaling that he has no idea what I'm talking about. That's fine. But that card itself, if you got it in foil, sold for like $800+. So people were opening up the Japanese World of Spark boxes in droves to try to get those money cards. I know the anime version of Narset is also picking up a pretty penny right now. But yeah, just some good solid arts. I really like that they've been branching out more. And this is kind of just the beginning of Wizards trying on slightly different art styles and stuff for things. We've seen them more recently with the Secret Layers, stuff like that. But yeah, Japanese Planeswalker's really cool.
And wrapping up the month of May, we had Popper bans. Three cards got banned in Popper. Is that three cards?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's three cards. So we had Gush, Gataxian Probe, and Daze. Now, you'll have to remind me. Gush was...
I think it was four or five mana. It was you draw two cards. It was I think it was an instant. And you could, instead of paying its full mana cost, you could return two islands to your hand and get it for free. So just an all-around really good tempo card. There was a really good blue deck running around with Delver of Secrets and Gush and Gataxian Probe being another really nice tool where it's one Phyrexian mana. That means you can either pay blue or two life. And it's a sorcery. Look at your opponent's hand, draw a card. So it just gives you free card. It gives you good card advantage and just gives you free information.
Yep.
For the cost of two life.
And Daze, I think, was played in... Is it Delver, wasn't
yeah.
it? So yeah, they basically killed Delver decks. Not killed them, but hurt them.
They gutted blue quite a bit by removing those three cards. Daze being another nice tool where it's, I think it was just a two mana spell that countered the target spell unless your opponent plays one, pays one. But you could also just return a land and cast it for free. So there was a lot of gotcha moments with that card. It's just all around, just some solid Popper bans. Just kind of freeing up blue's hold on the format with, you know, Ponder and Preordain and all those cards still being in the format. It's just blue was really strong. There are a lot of really good blue blue commons. So yeah, we've made it all the way to May.
Yeah, we'll pick up in June with the War of the Spark release next time.
Next time.
Yeah, finish out 2019's review and talk about what's ahead.
What's ahead in the horizon? What do we want to do? What do we expect? What do we dream for? What do we hope for? All those wonderful things you'll find out next time. But until then, this is Chase signing off.
And this is David saying, peace out!